proclaiming the good news to a needy world. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
What is he accomplishing? How do we look at the church, its mission, and its mandate? And are we really taking the gospel to the ends of the earth with success? That's what we're looking at today on Abounding Grace Radio as we go back to the book of Acts and consider Acts chapter 8 and the well-known story of the Ethiopian eunuch. Such a powerful story, a beautiful story of the Lord taking the gospel to the ends of the earth and showing us his great power to save all of his people. Thanks today for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. Please visit us on the web at agradio.org, agradio.org. The number is 888-504-8805, 888-504-8805. Find us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. If you can support us, 100% of your support goes to continue to bring Abounding Grace Radio to you. Here's now part one of a message that I have titled, To the Ends of the Earth, from Acts chapter 8 and the Ethiopian eunuch. We hope this program is a great blessing to you today on Abounding Grace Radio.
We often talk today about how the church fails at evangelism. This is a big current discussion that is happening right now in the church as we look at a divided culture. And as all these discussions constantly come to us about race and culture, we are feeling the pressures. I don't think in my ministry I felt it quite like this since I began. The pressure of everything from the world dictating its speech to us to think through how to handle the mess that we're in. It's racially divided. All discussions right now are all about race and division and the complications that come from it. And so we're having all these discussions right now in our culture about all of this, and the church is taking a heavy beating right now. Heavy beating. All the problems that are going on has launched the church into a sort of panic mode that is actually having the effect not of unifying us in the discussions. It's actually having the effect of transforming us into looking and sounding a lot more like the world in its own divisions. Yes, the church has failed. I could rehearse a lot of ways the church has failed, but not always. Not always. Is there hope in this mess that we're in right now? This is why I love Acts. I think Acts is a very timely book for the church because the things that they were facing in the first century, at least in terms of persecution, they had it way worse, and they are committed. They are committed. They're not deviating from the mission. They're not absorbed in all the world's discussions. It is so focused and driven by what Jesus commanded them to do and to let the results fall to the Lord. This book is so helpful in that regard. The Roman Empire was against them. They're being persecuted. From a human standpoint, they don't stand a ghost of a chance to advance the gospel to the ends of the earth. This is what Acts is showing us, though. It's showing us something really important this morning. And I was thinking, how do I summarize this particular passage? Do you know what we have here simply stated in the section that we just read is a determined God to fulfill his great commission? This is all about the sovereignty of the Lord to do what he said he was going to do. We're getting a good dose of the sovereignty of God in missions and the Great Commission. Nothing's going to stop him. He's going to fulfill his word. He's going to fulfill his purpose. And before us this morning, already early in Acts, he saves an Ethiopian man, a black man. Very important to the Lord. Wanted us to understand this. Wanted us to appreciate what he's doing. That this man would have a huge influence back in the region in which he would go. A place, though, where he was sent by the Greek world was considered the ends of the earth. This is so important for the structure of Acts and what Acts is doing. In a sense, this is giving us an early forecast of what is to come. And I believe has a powerful reminder to us. It comes this way in all of our frustrations that are happening in the world. Just like they had frustrations, just like they had complications, just like they failed. Remember last time, the apostles were having a hard time accepting the Gentiles. You'll see that with Cornelius. They had a hard time last time. The Lord's pulling them out of Jerusalem. We have a sovereign God who is showing us he's not going to lose one of his sheep. It will be immensely successful when we stand back at the end. But we should consider carefully what he's telling us to do and listen and see how focused the apostles and the early church was, so that in all of this dialogue that's going on now, everything's about dialogue, everything's about talk and dialogue and talk, trying to figure all this out, maybe it's our own lack of confidence in the power of God to do this and our impatience that is our greatest hurdle. Our impatience that is our greatest hurdle. In looking at this text this morning, that's what I want to see. This comes as an encouragement to us when everything is against us to look to God in his power to fulfill what he said he was going to do when it's humanly impossible. When it's humanly impossible. That's this passage. He will build his church and the gates of hell will not prevail. In looking at this text, we have Christ capturing for us his purpose in the Great Commission. And you'll notice today, I heard a few comments that some people would like outlines. So I'm being very nice to you and I gave you an outline. Okay, you'll see that there in the sending of Philip and the hearing of Jesus and the entering of his kingdom. And please keep all that in front of you. I'm going to refer back to it. All these things are set in front of us today. And you'll notice then the close tie to what we studied last time. You'll see that the tie that the apostles were found in the Samaritan villages, the very one that John had said, do you want us to call down fire from God and destroy them? And Jesus said, you don't know what manner of spirit you are of and what I'm doing. There they were in the Samaritan villages preaching the gospel. Now, in that connection, as they were evangelizing, an angel of the Lord comes to Philip. Notice in verse 6. An angel of the Lord spoke to Philip. Get up and go south to the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is the desert road. So he got up and he went. I love this particular beginning of sending of Philip here. Because it has everything to do with what we've understand from Romans 10. How shall they believe? How will they hear without a preacher? How will they preach unless they are sent? God has to send. And the sending is done by God, but also the direction and the place is done by God. So that what we have is a divine calendar and a divine map that is being fulfilled by the Spirit. You always have to keep that in mind. This is the Spirit working here and guiding and directing the church to go where he goes. To go where no man has gone before. And I understand, as many of you jumped on me last week, that was not Star Wars, that was Star Trek. When we think about this, Jesus said the same thing when he was in Samaria, that I have to go there. That he was on the Lord's divine calendar and map to go where he was sent, fulfilling the Father's will. It's the same thing. And we should remember this. The Lord has it mapped out. The Lord has it plotted out. The Lord knows where he's going to take his gospel. The Lord is telling us where we should go. Now, it's an interesting choice because of where the Lord is sending him. When we look at the ancient world, we tend to think in categories of Greek and Jew and Romans. But there was another category, if you talk in the ancient world, that they knew all too well. In the language and a phrase that they knew all too well, there were those who lived beyond the fringes of the Roman Empire. It was known as these places, the ends of the earth. Rome was the center, the ends of the earth. This is where he's being sent already. We have already in Acts a sort of premature fulfillment of what Jesus said, and you will be my witnesses in all of Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria, that was last week, to the ends of the earth. And here we are. This is very much taken from the book of Isaiah, that certain promises were made in the book of Isaiah. Remember Isaiah 52 verse 10 said, "The ends of all the earth shall see the salvation of our God." Here we are. This is fulfillment. We're now at the time the Old Testament looked to as the time of fulfillment. This was promised. Well, who does Philip encounter? There was an Ethiopian man, a eunuch, it says, an high official of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, who was in charge of her entire treasury. He had come to worship in Jerusalem. We read that he was an Ethiopian under Candace, the queen. The name Candace was a title, important title, like we would talk about Pharaoh as a title in Egypt. You'll notice here that this man was the head of the treasury and a man of great power in Ethiopia. He had obviously been, at least as I looked at this and thought about this, a Gentile proselyte to Judaism, but this comes with many problems in the text. We know from Acts chapter 2 that 15 nations were mentioned there at the Pentecost event, and they were known as proselytes of the gate. These proselytes of the gate would travel 200 miles, some of them, to come to Jerusalem at their seasons of celebrations and all the events, especially the Passover, understanding they needed the God of Israel. They needed the God of Israel. They were believing in the God of Israel. There's a big problem, though, the text is establishing. Under the old covenant, there were barriers that prevented certain people from getting close to the God of Israel. Now, we know it prevented everyone from getting close to the God of Israel. But the Jews didn't quite understand that, did they? Under the structure of Judaism, he was outside the kingdom. First, there are a series of barriers here. First, the temple itself was a barrier. Remember, there were these series of courts in the temple, and you would come and you would first have to enter the court of the Gentiles, and then you'd come up to the court of women, and then you would come to the court of the male Jews, and then the priests, and then you get up all the way to the Holy of Holies. It was a step system, wasn't it? It was a hierarchical system. The most holy place was sealed off by this big 6-inch thick curtain. The farthest he could go was the court of the Gentiles. He might have been able to come in there, but there was another barrier here, and it was the fact that he was a eunuch. Now, in our context, we can't process this. In the ancient world, a eunuch was somebody who was castrated and dismembered. I've always been kind of intimidated to preach this text for obvious reasons. It's just a challenge to talk about because we can't imagine these kind of things. Why would somebody do this? Well, it's not hard to figure out. He was a servant in the kingdom of Candace, the queen. The king risked nothing. He made sure there was no threats to his wives or little children coming along who might take his kingdom. So this is what they did in these kingdoms. This is what eunuchs were who served close in those kingdoms so that there was nothing that would threaten the kingdom. But it's a colossal problem the text presents for us that I think we have to think about. Remember, in the old covenant, what had to happen is you had to be circumcised. If you were a Gentile like him, you had to be washed and circumcised to become a Jew. He's a eunuch. That's a big obstacle to entering the kingdom. The Old Testament on purpose raises this issue in the law as one of the greatest barriers. And I'm going to read the law just for a minute. This is Deuteronomy 23:1. "No one whose testicles are crushed or whose male organ is cut off shall enter the assembly of the Lord." If you're a visitor this morning, we don't usually talk about these things. I assure you, you can come back next week and we won't be talking about this. This was total defilement. You have to understand, this was inspired by God for a reason. This was total defilement. No eunuch could be more than this proselyte of the gate. He's restricted. He's restricted. He couldn't enter the assembly of the Lord. They had no access to the inner courts and ultimately what led to the Holy of Holies. And we talked about, really, nobody did. He couldn't submit to circumcision. This all about defilement and barring. And the main point being here, God was teaching, you have a situation that's presented that makes something humanly impossible for him to enter the kingdom in the old order. That's the point. He can't do it. It can't happen. Now, the covenant of grace, which always was, you'll see in a minute, was in place. But I want you to think about this for a minute. This is a huge teaching point. This man epitomizes the question, how could this situation be overcome? When looking at it from a Jewish perspective, he exhibits the greatest obstacle in the Old Testament. He exhibits the single greatest obstacle in the Old Testament to entering. It's similar to David. I remember preaching Psalm 51 and saying, when David committed his sin with Bathsheba and then the murder that he committed, you know what the law required? Death. Death. How in the world could he get out of that? There's always these tensions the Old Testament is showing us and teaching us so that we're prompted to ask these kinds of questions. How? How? The impossibility of the law intended to force people into this dilemma so that we'd think about it, which the Jews often didn't think about for themselves. This man was not only on the fringes of the world, he was not only on the ends of the earth, he was on the fringes of Judaism and couldn't get in. That's the dilemma. So here's the imagery. He comes 200 miles to worship. What a picture. He's searching for a way to the God of Israel. I find this so powerful and so moving. This man's searching, and yet he had no access. You know what Paul would say in Ephesians to us? You now have access, but at one time you had no access. You were aliens and strangers to the covenants. You were those people. You think of Stephen for a minute now and why his sermon was so important. What was his point about the temple? Stop localizing God in that box. Stop that. Stop it. God was never bound up in a box. Moses learned that at the burning bush event. Here's a Gentile searching for the God of Israel. But he couldn't find him. The God of Israel would have to go find him. That's this. That's the beauty of this. There's one more great obstacle here. I've given you two. Here's a third. This obstacle is the greatest. But it's the obstacle that levels the playing field. It's the obstacle that levels the playing field for the Jews. What's he doing? He's reading the Jewish scriptures, and he can't understand it. He just can't understand it. And right at this moment, in God's wonderful providence, this is why the doctrine of providence is so beautiful. Well, boys and girls, nothing happens by chance. He tells Philip, the Spirit, go right now, overtake the chariot, right now. Obviously, he had obtained in Jerusalem a scroll of the Old Testament, the Septuagint, and he's reading it. It's the Greek translation of the Old Testament. Luke records that in verse 28 that he was sitting in his chariot and reading Isaiah the prophet of all choices. Now, you and I take for granted sermons and hearing this all the time and learning the Bible. Let me ask you, you have the scroll of Isaiah, and now you have sat down to read it. You're going to begin at verse 1, right? Chapter 1. You imagine what he would have been exposed to as he goes through Isaiah. He starts in verse 1, and there's this severe indictment against the nation of Israel. I am tired of your worship. I am so sick of it. Your new moons and your sacrifices. My soul loathes. You're just going through the motions. There's no heart in that. I can't endure iniquity in the sacred meeting anymore. I'm weary of bearing them. Then he comes to chapter 1, and it says, come now, you. Let's reason together, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be white as snow. How? Comes to chapter 6. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. And when I saw that, and I heard them say, holy, 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 I dropped and covered before the God of Israel. He was breaking me up in his holiness. He was crushing me in his glory. Woe is me, I'm undone. I'm a man of unclean lips, and I dwell among all those in Israel who are of unclean lips. Go, Isaiah. I'm sending you to them to speak that word, but guess what? Hearing they will not hear, and seeing they will not see or understand. He's walking this whole path of Isaiah. Then he comes to the judgment sections on the nations. Imagine hearing that. Fear and the pit and the snare are upon you, O inhabitant of the earth, Ethiopia. He's searching. This is a big problem. I haven't listened. Do the Jews know who their God is, immense in his holiness, and no one can get near him because of sin? Their sins have barred them from God. He wants to come to worship God, and the text says that he's leaving without ever really having worshiped God. What a picture of the hopelessness of the human race. He can't remedy a situation. All the talk, nobody can remedy their misery, can they? But is anyone even asking the right questions anymore? Is anyone even thinking about what's most important? What does searching look like? This is the best example of searching you'll ever find. It's at this moment the Lord starts seeking him. Philip, go. Go out there. Go down to the road. Go to the road. I've got one for you. It's just so beautiful, isn't it? I've got one for you. And as Philip makes his time, he starts running because that's what, you know, beautiful are the feet of those who bring you the gospel of peace, right? We run to you. We like preaching. We want to give you good news. He runs, and in God's providence, guess where he is in the book? Isaiah 53. What a moment, huh? Isaiah 53, which is so interesting because the Spirit, and Luke understood so clearly, this was a great moment for reminding the church how they were reading the Bible and what the mission of the church always was to be. Which means that right here, as we come, we really have probably one of the most important sections in the entire book of Acts that captures the whole Great Commission so powerfully and so beautifully as the solution to everything in this world. The solution. And God has sovereignly arranged it all. He's stuck at Isaiah 53. He's read the whole book, and he gets to Isaiah 53, and he's stuck. He can't move. Stuck. He had heard about the holiness of God. He heard about judgment, all that. He moved on. But he gets here and he cannot get out of it. Here it was. He was led as a sheep to the slaughter. And as a lamb before its shearer is silent, so he opened not his mouth. In his humiliation, his justice was taken away. And who will declare his generation? For his life is taken from the earth. He can't get it out of his head. That's one question he can't move on from. Who would face that? Who would be wounded for our transgressions this way? Pierced through, a sword would go right through him of God's wrath. Who would be accursed in such a way? who would be stricken so that by his stripes I could be healed. Verse 35, we read that Philip opened his mouth and beginning at this scripture, preached Jesus to him.
Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll free at 888-504-8805. Once again, 888-504-8805. Or contact us on the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. Connect with us on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station or subscribe to the AG Radio podcast in iTunes or use our free Android app. Thanks for listening. And remember, where sin abounded, grace abounded more.